Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Now, South Africa is at a critical juncture in its energy transition. With the newly enacted Climate Change Act of 2024, the country is aiming to balance its ambitious net zero commitments with the protection of workers and industries. But what does this actually mean in practice? And my question is, how can labour law and workplace regulations ensure that the important shift to a greener economy doesn't come at the expense of many who are already vulnerable? Joining me now is Professor Debbie Collier, Director of the Centre for Transformative Regulation of Work at the University of the Western Cape. Professor, a very warm welcome to you. So maybe let's start with some of the direct workplace impacts of rising temperatures. How are they affecting workers in different industries?
So the direct effects, of course, are the implications for workers. And we saw this just 2 years ago in January. We saw the death of 7 farm workers from heat stroke in the Northern Cape. And there's simple risk management measures that can be taken to prevent that. But more importantly, or rather perhaps more concerning, are the indirect implications that we have to deal with. So working in increased heat leads to a loss of productivity. And studies have shown that heat stress wiped out the equivalent of 4% of Africa's GDP in 2022. Globally, it's around 2%. Places a strain on our public services, demands on the public health system, including responding to extreme weather events, which we've seen increasingly, for example, the KZN and Eastern Cape floods. So it creates pressures on public health and our public services. So all round, it's something we really have to approach differently, and our Climate Change Act gives us the opportunity to do that.
So in terms of that different approach then, are there specific all-purpose protections that now need to be in place for people during this transition?
So I think we do need to see a much greater level of coordination, and the Climate Change Act gives us the opportunity for this coordination. So it's bringing disaster management mechanisms into that labor law and world of work space. It's upgrading, updating our occupational health and safety considerations. We really need to bed down our social protection for workers. One of the problems with our labor law actually is it's got a rather narrow scope of application. So, and we all know our high levels of unemployment and inequality. So some of the sort of longer term mechanisms that we need really need to coordinate labor law with other forms of interventions. Skills development will become critical, of course, as we transition to a decarbonized economy.
Aside from the skills development, what other obstacles do you see then to that coordination or collaboration that you refer to?
We'll talk about funding as an obstacle, often as a country, but I think the obstacles are quite often human and human behavior and, you know, the human ability to adapt and change. Our laws we can change quite easily, but we really need to change how we have the conversation around a transition. So economies that have been and countries that have achieved better outcomes, both in terms of equality, achieving greater levels of equality, greater levels of employment, sustainability, there's always a much greater consensus on the goals. And there's a commitment to achieving those goals. So there's much higher levels of trust and transparency and engagements. And that makes it easier to plan and coordinate for the just transition. So the barrier is often a human one. We really do need to have that dialogue and consultation at all levels. And, you know, traditionally, our labor law, our world of workspace has been an adversarial forms of collective bargaining between industry and organized workers, with government playing a key role there, but government's role become increasingly important. But also we need to expand the scope of what we're focusing on. Labor law and industrialization has not been concerned with the environment at all. It's been concerned, you know, with how do we distribute the economic gains of industrialization. And I think we need to realize industrialization got us to this problem. So we can't use the same tools. We need new tools. But we have a good framework for that.
And Professor, given the competing social and economic priorities in this country, you talk about the importance of the conversation to start happening. Are you confident that there is the appetite, the wherewithal to have that dialogue?
I've engaged within the NEDLAC space and the PCC Presidential Climate Commission, and there's certainly an appetite to have the dialogue, and the right conversations are taking place there. But we need to see that translating to conversations on the ground. And we need, you know, much greater sectoral conversations taking place at sector and industry level. You know, we have these industry master plans. What are they doing and how are they coordinating this? And then down to workplace level. Local governments are going to become more important because if we, by transitioning to green energy, we are going to fragment the energy and redistribute energy. It's currently really centralized. That will be distributed down to local level. So we really need to have everyone in on the conversation. And, you know, there are pockets of where this is happening. And sometimes it's a stuckness about not realizing where the places are to speak and to have the conversation.
The Act also includes a goal of something called decent work. What is that?
So decent work is, this is for labor lawyers, is quite an eye-opener because we have the term embedded in, decent work embedded in the way we think and talk about labor law, but we've never actually included it in legislation. And it's an ILO, International Labor Organization concept around decent work, which has, you know, four pillars to it. I don't think we have enough time to go into it, but it is about social dialogue, about rights at work and having access to, you know, acceptable forms of work. And so that for me really sparked the conversation with climate change law. How can we use climate change law actually to achieve the objectives of labor law? Labor law also is, it's constantly under existential crisis, precisely because we have high levels of unemployment. We talk about the informal economy, and if we look on the continent, there's more happening in the informal economy than there is in the formal economy. So labor law really also needs to find its niche in this climate change environment to be useful and to sustain itself. So the decent work in the Climate Change Act, it allows us to tie these two pieces of legislation together. And, you know, as I mentioned, I mean, industrialization and work, labor law itself has been part of the carbonization process, and use of fossil fuels has generated these rules. So we really do need to look at the objectives of labor law as well.
Let me touch on one final issue, if I can. I think this is a commonly held belief now that automation and artificial intelligence is going to lead to job losses as companies start to go green. The challenge, of course, is to balance efficiency with employment. And that's something that organizations are starting to grapple with.
Yeah, it's a big issue. I mean, I think AI and automation, it can create much more efficient systems. We don't need as many low-skilled workers if we move to renewable energy systems. So this does create challenges, and it really, the importance is around planning and not assuming that new jobs will be created, because there is, you know, the prospect are rosy that we can actually create more jobs, but we really need to look at what that means on the ground. I think we really need to have a broader look at our economy and the types of work that we value. Low-skilled workers are using technology and AI. We look at Uber, we look at, you know, the delivery workers, and we actually need to look at ways of protecting workers who are already making use of that, because they actually fall outside of the net of labor protection. So it really will take a lot of, if we don't do the skills training, we really are, it's going to be a transition, but not a just transition. And that's a crisis, and that's going to be very disruptive. So it really will take a lot of proactive skills training. We need to value workers in other forms of work. And we're seeing this, you know, happening. Care workers, for example. I mean, I've mentioned the Uber workers, waste reclaimers and recycling, you know, our circular economy. Gig workers. I mean, we look at the disaster in the informal and artisanal miners. We should be building up measures of protection there as well, and making sure that we're creating decent work, and work that currently, frankly, is not at all decent.
Professor Debbie Collier, thank you very much indeed. Director of the Centre for Transformative Regulation of Work at the University of the Western Cape.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.